And good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday Morning Show with myself, Julie Calamine, and Phil Huff. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Julie.
How's your week been?
The weekend was really good, although we did not see you or Dexter at the canine keg pull.
That is very true. I practiced a little bit with Dexter, and it was not going well. I didn't want to be embarrassed, so I did not come.
Another year of training first.
How was the canine keg pull?
It was fabulous, as always.
That's good. Yeah. Well, we have got a really interesting morning show this morning. We're joined by two of the board members from the Lake Pendre of Idaho Club. That is Dave Ivey and James Mullen. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And we're lucky to have Tom Whalen from Idaho Fish and Game, who works with bull trout in the lake. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
We'll be back to you all, you three, in a moment. But meantime, we're going to talk about the weather, and that'll be about it. I think we've covered our weekend. So the upcoming weather, for those of you who care, and I know you all do, is today high of 34 with snow. Scattered snow, then partly sunny. There might be a little bit of sun for skiing, etc. Tonight, plan on snow 100% with a low of 23. Wednesday, we'll have a little warmer weather, high of 40 with some rain and snow and breezy. That night will be a little cooler, 28, and then Thursday, 41 with more snow. So it's kind of a snowy, rainy week.
Yeah, the nights are getting shorter, the days are getting longer, which is really nice.
Yes, that sun feels really warm. For those of you who are just joining us, you're listening to 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported radio. You can also stream us online at krfy.org. And if you hear part of the show and want to hear the rest of it or miss entirely, you can always go to krfy.org and listen to the podcast. Well, let's get on to our interesting topic for this morning. Gentlemen, you're all very interested and involved in Lake Pendre and the fish in it and the water quality and everything like that. So why don't we start by having you tell us a little bit about yourselves, how you came to be where you are and so interested in the lake and fishing and taking care of the fish.
Hi, I'm Dave Ivey, and I am the Derby Master for the Derbies here on Lake Pendre. I've been fishing in the Derby since 1983. I've been a member of the club ever since then, pretty much, off and on. And I am a board member for 5 years now.
And how'd you come to be interested in the lake and fishing, Dave?
I've always been a fisherman since I was a little kid, and I came here to visit in 1983 and learned that the world record rainbow trout came out of this lake, so immediately I packed up and moved here.
For some people, it's the Longbridge. For you, it was a huge rainbow trout.
Well, it was the Longbridge, too.
There you go.
Chasing rainbows.
That's right. What about you, James? You got to grab that microphone.
Good morning. I'm James Mullen. I've been here since 1989. I'm also a board member for Lake Pendre Idaho Club. Also, like Dave, avid fisherman, have a charter captain's license and business out in Hope with Eagle Charters. And so my business is fishing and love it and have been fishing this week and it's been great. Excited about the new year and been here since 1989 and my Uncle Bob brought me up here to visit and I went out on a charter, Eagle Charters of course, and caught a 20-pound rainbow and of course I was hooked and so Uncle Bob said, well, why don't you buy the ranch here and come on move up, and I said, all right, and he made it where I couldn't refuse, and here I am, and love it, and wouldn't be anywhere else.
So for listeners who might not regularly fish or recently moved to the area, tell us a little bit about what the club's all about.
What do you think, Dave?
I'll wing it. Well, the club is formed here to establish a trophy rainbow fishery, and to protect and enhance Lake Pendre. We do several things each year to help out the fishing game and anybody else who might need help as far as the lake is concerned.
Mm-hmm. Is it a nonprofit?
It's a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm. And great. So it's the Lake Pendre of Idaho Club.
Yes.
I've always wondered, is there another Lake Pendre somewhere else?
I don't think so.
But why not be clear when you're naming an organization?
Right.
Also, this has been around for quite a few years, and it's very, very popular. I think it's been around since 1947. We're in our 70th year for our derby, and a lot of celebrities have come here to fish, and that world record rainbow sure stands out when people Google or look up Lake Pondere and the size of the trout and so forth that we catch out here is always appealing to avid fishermen around the world.
Yeah, it sure is. Well, Tom, why don't you tell us a little bit how you came to be you're a game warden, aren't you, with Fish
correct.
And Game?
Yes. Correct. I started in southern Idaho as working for the department out of the Burley area, and then initially I worked on stream research in the Big Wood River Valley, working mainly on cutthroats and rainbow that were actually in that drainage as well. And then worked up here, came up here in 2000, taking a job that's actually a little different than the normal game warden job in the sense that it's dedicated to one fish particularly, which is the bull trout. So I actually have a title of the bull trout officer position. It's a position that's actually funded through the mitigation program on the dams through Avista. It's been I'll just tell you right now, it's a great position, so much so that I don't want to leave it until I retire or dip over. But it's really kind of afforded a lot of opportunity to not just the enforcement side and kind of helping with the fishery, which has a lot of concerns, obviously, and a lot of things that have happened to it over the course since I've been here, let alone all the time that these guys have been here. But it also affords me the opportunity to do a lot of education, which I really sort of have really kind of taken a real interest in and love to pursue. So
there's a lot of education involved around bull trout. I mean, it's pretty special fish, and we've got to be very careful with it, correct?
Correct. And it actually is just beyond the fact that it's a fish. I mean, that it's native here, which native means it's been here for, I can't tell you how long. I'm not sure anybody can. It was a lot of people identified it initially, and particularly when I first got here, they actually misidentified it by calling it a dolly, as in a Dolly Varden, but it's actually truly not a Dolly Varden. It's sort of be like calling a steelhead a rainbow. They look similar, but they have different things that they do. Being one, a Dolly Varden actually goes to the ocean. And as an anadromous fish, and a bull trout is actually a resident form of that fish. So there are some, just some minor terminology things, but probably the bigger challenge was to get people to understand how it's tied to the bigger issue of water quality and the fact that it's the health of streams and water systems. It is our most sensitive fish, and by that I don't mean they cry. I just mean they are sensitive to water quality.
Well, I think it's interesting that we have with us the fisherman from Lake Pondere and the game warden from Lake Pondere. And, of course, you all don't fish for bull trout, right? No one's fishing for bull trout anymore.
Well, we don't fish for them on purpose. We do catch them now and then. I used to, back in the day, fish for bull trout quite often, and I'm part of the reason that they are in the shape they're in. I'm not proud to say that, but I used to eat a lot of them. They're very tasty fish.
Mm-hmm. Right, but not now. Now no one's fishing for bull trout.
Well, I think Dave was the last one to get the Dolly Varden trophy from the Lake Pondere Idaho Club Derby.
Yeah, that was, I think that was 89.
So what? They could actually, people do catch them because it's part of the process of catching fish. You don't know necessarily what you're going to get till it gets there. So part of the big challenge for me was the education side is not just like to kids, and which we do a lot of, but it's also to fishermen, any angler that's out there to say, hey, if you catch this, identify it. And depending on what the regulation is for that year, and that goes for any fish, right? You should know what it is that you've caught. It's just like hunting. You should know what it is before you pull the trigger. So the reality is that things have changed. People start to identify the fish that it has a real kind of a bigger meaning in terms of the environment it's in. So, which is a good thing. I mean, the fact that we have that fish tells you we have good water quality, and that's where they're in trouble is where they don't.
So if they were fished for one time and trophies given out, then it sounds like something changed. Was it a recognition that they were in peril, or did their numbers drop precipitously at some point?
Yeah, they got listed as a listed species on the endangered species list, and they're listed as threatened on there, which actually is a good thing in the sense that we are trying to get the population back up to a level where we can actually allow harvesting, and that ultimately is our goal. We've had a few setbacks, and actually a lot of it has to do with rain on snow events that we've had the last few years. We've lost age classes. If you ever watched what a bull trout does, it amazes you. It still amazes me every year, and I've been working with them for 17 years now, and it's amazing when you find a fish that's well into, you know, pushing 20 pounds, that's half out of the water spawning, and yet still knowing that that's a fish that we caught with the help of the Navy at 1,000 feet down is an amazing thing. Think of the water pressure change between those two environments and the fact that it's a unique fish in that regard. And so we, as far as management goes, we hope to have a season. That's kind of our goal. We're not about, you know, just shutting things down. We're trying to get those populations back to sustainable times. And I can tell you, if you go out on the water any given day, you could catch a bunch of bull trout if you fish a certain type of gear a certain way in a certain place. I can give you the example, that feeling that that's all that's there.
You mentioned they're spawning, and I know out hiking, I've seen some in late summer up in incredibly small streams and pools that have, the streams dried up and all that remains is a pool, and there are a bunch of really large bull trout.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about their migration and their spawning that way.
Well, we know from, we study them a lot. We know that on average, they're living to age 10. So what happens is they are emerging from the gravel that where you're seeing them in these, you know, these pools that are way up high. I talked about the four C's. They need cold, clean, connected, and complex water. Complex being trees, rocks, roots, things that keep things together, provide shade, because they're very, that ties back into the cold side of things. The fish will emerge, stay in the system until about 4 years old. And then when they come out, they're probably about the size of your hand, the length of your hand. When they get out to the lake, they suddenly, so, you know, whoa, food. And if they're part of that lucky, less than 1%, I might add, of a good run, less than 1% that actually survive from the 3,000 to 5,000 eggs that were laid by a female, they are going to return almost every year. For some reason, they take a year off, they take a break, and they'll live to, and they'll respawn for about 4 years to 3 to 4 years, till about age 9 or 10, which is about the last year that they seem to survive to.
I think we'd have to describe the bull trout as the iconic fish of the lake, right? I mean, like the mountain lion or the mountain goat, they're kind of a well, top-end fish that
I hate to say that in the sense that, you know, I do say they're the most sensitive, and I think they're the most somewhat unique fish in a lot of ways. But we also have, you know, right with them as a native fish, we have cutthroat. We also have the rainbow, which were actually introduced, as far as I know, in the 1930s, was first introduction. We did, as James noted, we had the world record rainbow. We actually still have the rainbow, the world record for this lake, bull trout. And I think, you know, given the kokanee rebound, which actually is not just helping rainbow, it's also helping bull trout. And some other, we have, you know, the spinoff species, things are, you know, kind of carried, fisheries, honestly, has been very good over the last few years and seems to be getting better. And it's very, very encouraging because I can honestly tell you that the early years, I remember a fisherman that I first talked to told me, I asked him what they caught out there. He goes, nothing. It's a dead sea.
The Dead Sea. Heard that a lot.
That might have been you, James.
Yeah.
Now, were they just trying to throw you off your game there?
Guys.
No, I think that was kind of the, you know, perception, and it was well-earned perception. Kokanee were tanking. The fishery was really looking pretty grim. These guys know better than me because they've been fishing it for a while. We did still have some big rainbow getting caught. But over years, and even going, you know, into the early 2000s or mid-2000s, you could tell that the size of some of the winning derby fish were actually getting smaller and smaller. And they do have, by the way, they have two derbies, not just one. And the fact is, these are this is a great club. They've put a lot into it. These guys care a lot about this fishery for on a lot of levels. Sometimes we argue about things, but that's good.
Yes. Well, on that note, let's get back to these fishing guys. They need a chance to talk. Well, for those of you who are just joining us, we're 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. But gentlemen, let's just talk. We've talked about the history of the bull trout over the years. Let's talk about how what's happened in the lake in your years fishing and how it's doing today and fish and what's happening with the fish you're catching.
Well, when I first started fishing here, started fishing with my buddy Jay, and he was quite the avid bull trout fisherman. And we used to fish along the shoreline quite a bit with downriggers later in the year and right on the surface earlier in the year. And we used to do quite well. We'd catch a lot of fish. We'd release most of them, and we'd eat a lot of them. As time went on in the early 2000s, we started seeing smallmouth bass and mackinaw in our traditional fishing grounds where we normally would catch bull trout.
And was it mainly bull trout, or are you catching rainbow trout in there too?
Well, we would catch rainbows, cutthroats, all of the trout species would be where we were fishing. And it just gradually got a lot worse to where we were catching smallmouth and then mackinaw. And as time went on with the AIP program.
And Dave, define the AIP program for me.
Well, it was money set aside by Avista to help get rid of the predator, the mackinaw, and reduce the numbers on the rainbow, which we all pitched in and did at $15 a head. I didn't buy any gas money for years.
For catching, what would you catch that you get $15 for?
A rainbow or a mackinaw.
I see.
And you'd cut the head off and put it in a freezer, and Fishing Game would pick it up, and in a week or so, you'd get a check. Sometimes I would catch 10, 12 in a day, and that was easy gas money there.
Paid to get fishing. Go fishing. It doesn't get much better than that.
Right. And so the reason to reduce those as predation was to assist some other species, right?
That was to assist the kokanee rebounding. Right. This is our biggest thing, is the kokanee basically run the whole lake as far as the feeding of the bull trout, the rainbows, the mackinaw, the German browns. You know, they're the food source out there. So without food, no fish, you know, the fish suffer. So that's our biggest thing, is to keep our population of our kokanee up where everybody enjoys fishing for the kokanee. Also, they're a landlocked salmon out there and very tasty also. Mm-hmm. And so now we have our numbers back up thanks to, you know, Fishing Game and their efforts and so forth. And now we can catch 15 kokanee per day. And that makes a nice little bucket of fish to take home.
I would add that it's also feeding some newcomers like walleye and pike. Mm-hmm. And those are big question marks and things on the horizon. One more thing to note is that when we first started the idea of the program, which was to take rainbow initially, and by the way, we still have the head program, the AIP program, we still have that, but we don't have it for rainbow. We only have it for lake trout. But it was not very popular when we first started the program, but it was a big turnaround.
So the kokanee seemed to be at the center of everything as a great fish to catch and eat, and I've enjoyed them. And also, as you mentioned, they sustain the other fish populations, but they're not native themselves, are they?
No. When you look at actually what fish we consider that actually are native, it's easier to list the ones that are native because there's so few compared to all the introductions that we have. So think of all the warm water fish, bass, crappie, walleye, things, those have been introduced. The German brown, for instance, didn't come from North Idaho. You might guess where it came from.
I think I know.
Yes. So that, in the early years, I don't think I could wear enough bulletproof vest to a public meeting because of what we were, proposing to do. Fortunately, the science was sound, and it was born, the results have borne out that this program now is considered such a success that it's being emulated, reproduced in other areas like Yellowstone, and Montana's using a portion of this type of program too.
So tell us a little bit more about the program.
The AIP program is kind of a twofold thing. One is for an angler, as David noted, to just turn in the target fish, which in this case now is just the lake trout, which you can still do. You can turn, there are stations where you can still submit a caught lake trout head into the freezer at one of four or five different locations that we have, actually five.
And are yes. the numbers of lake trout reducing? Are you finding that? Is it
so much so that the other phase of the program, which involved netting, like professional netting netters from the Great Lakes area, who've come out here, and you see that boat out there, and they're hauling big, large nets, and that side of the program is actually slowly being diminished. We are actually because our lake trout population is, we think, is from what we're seeing for population estimates, seems to be on the decline to such a point that we're able to kind of take our foot off the gas a little bit. I would say that, you know, it's hard to predict sometimes what's going to happen in the wild, and whether they would be removed entirely, I don't think that would happen. But we did have some very good brains working on the problem, and the solution seems to have worked. I think there are bigger things afoot with these newcomers that I just mentioned.
And I'm wondering, when they're netting and catching the lake trout, if they happen to catch the other new visitors, the walleyes and the bass, are they getting taken out too, or do they go back in the lake?
It's a different type of fishery in a sense that you don't find them typically in those deep water situations, like these guys typically are fishing those deeper water. But we do have people, obviously the bass clubs, that are very vested. We have people that are vested in walleye. We don't manage them one way or the other. Basically, there's no limit on walleye, no limit on pike. So you can go out and take as many as you can catch. That being said, there are people that want us to do that, to start to manage for them and limit those numbers and try to, you know, grow those populations. And of course, it's always like anything. You have a lot of different people vested in different things, and they don't always necessarily mesh.
I just heard that the other day the Hickey brothers, they went down to Bayview and did some netting down there, and they caught quite a few pike in the nets at 200 feet, and that's kind of a little concern. They were fishing for the Mackinac and ended up with a bunch of pike, so that's a little disconcerting also.
Yeah, pretty deep, right, for northerns?
That would be from what you – and it's not that – we found smallmouth. I know we've had a guy, you know, catching him at 170 feet, which you don't think of a smallmouth bass being at that depth. So whether or not we have a bigger problem afoot, that's exactly it. We don't know. That's something that's for future study and perhaps another, you know, addition to a similar program like we've done with lake trout. I can't answer that.
Yeah, hard to tell.
It depends on what kind of impact they might start having on the fishery.
You would think that they'd be a predator and would potentially cause a problem, though, wouldn't you?
I would say yes. They could. They are predators. I'm going to tell you right now, I checked the fish, a pike that was 36 pounds last year. You might have seen it in the paper. What was kind of disconcerting was the fact that our state record is at 40 pounds. And that fish that I checked last year here at 36 was actually 4 inches wider in girth than the state record. Wow.
I think it had like a 16-inch brown in his belly, too, is what I heard.
Yeah, I was going to say full of kokanees, maybe. Interesting.
So which of these have been introduced purposefully, some for the sports fishery, like the rainbow, and some have just found their way in, individuals have released them, or they've accidentally gotten introduced?
Well, truthfully, probably there's another state just upstream of us, shall remain unnamed. Yeah. But, you know, not...
We all know you mean Minnesota.
No. Come on, Phil.
It's not that they aren't concerned about the same things. It's just that those fish, once introduced to waters above us, have a real amazing, easily find a way to make it downstream and even through some of the biggest of hydro turbines and you name it. And I think if I do know, I am the first officer to check the walleye, and that was in 2001. And right after that, that's when they started, you know, people, it's not that they weren't here. It's just that, like lake trout, they were under the radar for a really long time. They were introduced in the 1930s. They didn't really become a problem until people started catching them in the 60s. And it was like, hey, wait a second, what's this about? And then the fishery changed. And so, it's all a question mark somewhat.
Well, so we've talked a bit about the AIP program, and it sounds like it's had some success, and maybe we'll have a future with other fish. It's an interesting topic. Let's take a song break, and we'll come back and talk a little bit about the fishing and see what you guys have been doing with the Derby and other things that Lake Pendre of Idaho Club have been doing. We're going to be hearing the Whiz Pops with the Bull Trout song. It's a kid's song, but I think it's a good one. And that was the Bull Trout song by the Whiz Pops. And Tom is going to tell us a little bit more about that song, some of the folks that were on the recorded the song, and a bit more about it.
Well, the band is actually out of Missoula, made up primarily of science teachers. And with the help of Rich Crawford from Trout Unlimited, who located the band, we had the idea early on, quite a few years ago, to try to find a band to do a song about our, what I will now call our iconic fish. That led to a music festival that which we do, which is called the Trout and About Festival, which is in August, and it's a growing thing. It's at Evans Brothers, kind of outside of that in the courtyard there, if you will, and it's grown to quite an event, and it's a very cool thing. And I hope LPOIC will actually attend next year and do a booth there too, sign people up. It's just a really fun thing, kind of celebrating all things fish.
And so, back to the song for just a moment. Before we came back on air, I thought I heard something about the Little Smokies.
Yes, three of the members who played on that song you just heard actually were on the Little Smokies, which is a band that won Telluride and is a very popular band in this area too.
And as listeners may remember, they were our band for the KRFY spring concert.
So now we know what to ask them to play when they come back.
That's right. We will have to ask them that. Well, let's move along and talk to the Derby gentlemen, our Lake Pendre of Idaho Club gentlemen, Dave and James. And I'd like to hear a little bit about the fishing season and what the club has been doing, the Derbies, events that you schedule, etc.
So we're really kicking off getting ready for our Spring Derby, which is, like I said, our 70th annual Spring Derby. So we're going to be excited about that. And we're excited about the kokanee return and the size of the rainbows we've been catching now for the last couple years. And we have an auction at the Elks Club, and that'll be on April 28th, Friday. And so everybody's welcome to come to that. And
is there any good stuff, James, that I'd want to come and win?
Oh yeah, it's primarily fishing stuff, but we get stuff from Coeur d'Alene Casino or Bonner's Casino, you know, stay and play or just spa packages or something. And all the businesses around this area know that it's an iconic Spring Derby, and they help out with the auction items and so forth. It's really great.
And then tell us about the Derby. I know you've got to pay for it. And then is it like a daily fishing contest? How long does it go on and what all happens?
Well, the Spring Derby this year runs 10 days. It generally does, a Spring Derby. There's prizes for first, second, third, fourth, and fifth.
Daily?
In a rainbow. No, we have daily prizes for the Mackinac only. Of course, we like to see the rainbows that aren't qualified for the standings be released. We're trying to build a trophy fishery here with the rainbow trout, of course. And so we don't have a daily anymore. We used to for the rainbow, but now just for the Mackinac. We have, we used to do, was called a K&K Derby forever for kokanee and Kamloops. Then they closed the kokanee fishery to help restore it. And when they opened it again, we decided we would try the kokanee division again. And so far, we haven't had any kokanee entered. the fish that were entered were juvenile rainbows. So since then, we've just eliminated the kokanee again. There is some stirrings to maybe bring that category back.
So the Derby last 10 days, when does it start?
It starts April 28th, I believe.
Friday night is the auction at the Elks, and then Saturday the 29th.
And
then runs through the following Sunday.
Right. And James, do you find that a lot of folks like to do charters during the Derby? Is that a big time part?
Oh, absolutely. I've already booked 3 days for the Derby, and everybody, it's a big buzz, you know, around town. I will say that we have that auction period time. That's when the rainbows run up the tributaries and spawn. And so we have our Derby during that time to give the rainbows a chance, the big rainbows a chance to move up into the tributaries. And so we don't molest those fish. And that's, you know, it's a fundraising for the club and so forth. It's our biggest fundraiser.
So you move the focus onto the Mackinac and off of the rainbows.
There's still a chance, you know, to catch a big, I think last year was 18 pounds or something. And we're fishing for big rainbows, obviously. And yeah, 19 pounds was our big rainbow last year.
Wow.
And the fish are getting bigger every year. Our kokanee have rebounded, so they're nice, big, fat rainbows, and we're having a lot of fun out there. And it's really a fun thing to do.
Well, Dave and James, tell me what a typical day out in your rainbow or Mackinac fishing boat is like. What happens, and how many fish might you catch, and what might a person expect?
Well, usually on my boat, the Wave Hopper, we start off with a nice gourmet breakfast and get our lines early. We're out in the water right at sunup, and usually that's one of the most productive times in the early morning and later afternoon. You could catch one any time, but that seems to be the best bite. Just looking at my log here on... see here, October 1st, I caught 6 rainbows. None of them giant, all of them smaller rainbows. I had 17 rods out.
Oh, my.
And there was 4 anglers on my boat, total of 13 hours fishing. I have a log that I keep, Fishing Game gave me, so they can keep track of what's going on in the fishery. And I can tell you these things.
That's nice. That's helpful.
Yeah.
So, I can tell you that the fishing is rebounding, and due to us catching and releasing a lot of these fish that and the numbers that Fishing Game has imposed on the fishery itself, moving it from like 6 fish to 2 fish per day, there's still a good opportunity of catching fish. There's just not the quantity of fish we used to see. But we're hoping, you know, with the help of Fishing Game, that you know, that our rainbow recovery program moves forward, and we start to see the rainbow recover and we get more quantity of fish to do that.
So looking at the future, is there a vision for what it should be like, or you're working towards it being like in the future?
Sure. More bigger fish.
That's
sure,
easy.
I'll buy that.
I will say this. I when I moved from southern Idaho, what these guys call small fish are enormous, you know. And I remember thinking, oh, my gosh, you know, because I thought like a 12 to 14-inch fish was a big fish if you caught it, you know, down in Emmett or Burley or Sun Valley area where I was living. Those fish that I see now are really big fish. And what's kind of really encouraging to me, it's not so much the overall size of the fish, it's more the girth of the fish, which tells me they're being fed. Because one of the things that we've looked at too is the is also the age structure of these fish. And so we're seeing, you know, nice 10 to 20 pound fish, which aren't necessarily that old, which tells you there's room for growth. And so I think if we have the kokanee there, we're back to maybe we're going to get back to that level, hopefully, where we have some of those fish becoming records again.
We've talked a little bit about some of the more desirable species, but is there a vision for a certain amount of abundance, or is the focus on two or three species, or is it to create a more varied fishery?
Well, I think Fish and Game's vision was to remove the predator Mackinac, that you can go to Priest Lake, and that's a predominantly all Mackinac lake. So if you wanted to go catch Max, you can go to Priest Lake. If you wanted to come to Pend Oreille, you're fishing for the iconic big rainbows. If you want to go to Coeur d'Alene Lake, they're more about a Chinook salmon. So I think I could be wrong, but I think that's kind of where their vision was.
It's actually one of the things that we do on an annual basis, continually, basically, is we scope. We try to find out, for one, we have the history. We know what it was. For instance, take Priest, because a lot of what we've done here, which is considered a huge success, people are asking us, some people, not all, but some people are asking us, why aren't you doing this in Priest? Why aren't you trying to bring back the mixed fishery, because a lot of people don't know this too, but there was a very good mixed fishery up there, very similar in structure to what we have here in LPO. And the question is, do you want to do that? Do you want to? Because really, the people that fish it are, as James say, it's a lake trout mac fishery, because that's what's there. It's not necessarily what people, like the majority of people, can fish. So the whether or not we are scoping that. We're asking people for their input. We don't know if we're going to go that route or not. We haven't gone down that road yet. We are asking the question, though.
James, you began to talk about the Rainbow Recovery Program. Can you tell us just a little more about that?
Well, we have Lake Pend Oreille started, I think it was, 4 years ago that we went to Canada. And when we recovered the kokanee, we went ahead and went back to Canada, where the rainbows are called Girard Kamloops, and they come from Girard Creek and Kamloops, British Columbia. And that's those fish up there, the rainbows, they grow so fast. In 6 years, we could get a 20-pound rainbow.
They're a very unique strain, right?
That's a strain of fish that we brought down. And so this is what we want to replace, and that's what they put into the lake in the 40s, and that's what became the world record rainbow. It was broken like 11 times in 2 years when they first introduced those fish, and that's where we got our strain. That's where we wanted to bring them back from. They're having a little problem up there with their kokanee population, so they're in a little trouble. So it's a balance between this kokanee predator or kokanee rainbow, kokanee mackinaw thing, where it's really a fine-tuned thing where it could go swing one way or the other, whether it be a good fishery or a poor fishery.
There is nothing static in the wildlife world, period. It's changing continually.
How true. So are you finding that the rainbows are getting bigger year to year?
Oh, absolutely. Right now, we're really excited. Like I said, the food and the kokanee drive the whole system. And I think Tom might give us a number, but I think they filled the hatchery with the kokanee that they milked at Granite Creek in the fall in November. And they do a great job by introducing those back into the lake. They grow them up to fry and then release them back into the lake.
Yeah, I do have those numbers. Actually, last year, 2016, we had 1.1 million spawners. Mm. And you got to keep in mind, that's up from about 10,000 that we had.
Oh, my.
Fewer than 10,000 in 2007. So, and that's what we have last year, is the second highest tally that we've had since the population is backed up. So that's really a good sign. We're planning on stocking about 9 million kokanee. So that's a good start. Of course, survival is a different thing. So it's all about teeth and getting eaten and, you know, a few other factors.
So how do you count them?
Oh, very tough. One at a time.
Don't you weigh the eggs and get that number from a weight or something?
We do. Okay. James is actually right. It's like water displacement, like in the bathtub. You know, you can kind of get an idea of how many fish you have based on displacement.
I see.
Okay.
And also, I should say, echolocation. We do a lot of different things, you know, for fish that are actually out in the main water. We have our research team, which is located in Bayview, And you'll see those boats sometimes coming out and working overnight, yeah, actually.
Are you guys tasing those poor fish? Is there electroshock?
No, I have, and that's what I used to do when I first started, but we don't necessarily do that except in stream systems. And actually, you will see Vista biologists actually doing that in the river, in the Clark Fork River.
And they recover, don't they?
Don't they move the bull trout above the dam and move them to Montana where they're trying to move and migrate that way?
Exactly. You know, one of the things that it's actually a great crew to work with is the Avista biology crew. I know we all have to pay bills, which we don't get too happy about. But the reality is for what they do on the ground in terms of research is phenomenal as an agency. They've won, actually as a project that we've been part of, they've won 9 national awards in a row for a mitigation project, which was phenomenal too, if you stack it up against other hydro projects.
I've heard them speak at the Trout Unlimited annual banquet, and they really have done a lot.
Right. And people don't realize that sometimes, the work they actually put in the ground. James is right. They are moving fish around. Keep in mind the dam, when it went in, the reason why we had those records in the 1940s coincided with the dams going in 1951. The kokanee population started taking a big... You could see the graphs, if you will, because our highest numbers of kokanee populations were right in those last few years, right before the dam, and as the dam went in, and then it all started tapering off. So they have, in turn, put a lot back into it to try to help recover it. Of course, it wasn't Avista then. It was probably Washington Water and Power.
What they're mitigating for are the effects of the kokanee and the bull trout not being able to go upstream.
Right, number of naturally. Things. Exactly.
And that opens a whole... can of things we probably won't have time to get into, but fluctuating lake level management as far as its impact on kokanee and therefore the fishery, and it's a complex world.
Yeah, it is. We've done some projects too to try to mitigate that just ourselves with and using again Avista finances to we've actually built spawning beds down in Bayview, and those right away, I mean, it's like you build it, they will come. They came. And they showed up in numbers and started using all those gravel beds. And if you ever go down to the Farragut boat ramp, you would have seen the equipment there. And basically, you made big gravel beds at the correct depth, and they fill it and they use it. They were on it almost immediately.
Well, it's so good to hear that our efforts are having some success. Guys from the fishing side, again, I'm going to ask you one more question, then we're going to wrap up our show for the morning. Just wondering, I know you're a nonprofit group and you raise money and you're trying to help out the fishery. Are there things that you do beyond auctions? Are there opportunities for, do you need help or is it covered what you're doing?
Well, we could use more members and more help, mostly more help. There's a group of us on the board that seem to do all the work like any club or organization. You know, we're always looking for help and donations. We do the auction. We have 3 derbies a year. There's also 2 other derbies, the Captain Stable Derby and Bayview Derby. And we help out with that.
Members only derby.
Yeah, the members only derby.
Yeah, a reason to become a member.
And then a fall derby at Thanksgiving.
Right.
So for the folks who enjoy the fishing, they might consider joining your organization.
We have bonuses as far as the prizes are concerned. If you're a member of the club, there's a few places in the derby. You will split $2,000 between any members that are in the standings. So this year, first place is $4,000.
Wow.
In the Rainbow Division. If everybody's a member, you stand to get $400, maybe more. And then if you buy your pin at the auction, there's also a bonus at $250. So that's $4,650 for first place.
Another way to fish and get paid.
Yeah,
my
it's pretty
word.
Motivating to get out there and catch the big one.
Well, I want to thank all 3 of you, Dave Ivey, James Mullen, and Tom Whalen, for joining us this morning. Phil, are you?
We do have one more, I think, an announcement from Tom. There's an upcoming meeting about the state of the lake that's important for the listeners to hear.
Yeah, that's right, Dave. We have a stay late meeting, so you get to hear all the experts, if you will, and public gets to ask questions too. On March 30th, and that'll happen at the Ponderay Event Center from 6 to 8 p.m. So it's basically a just tells you everything going on, and we'll probably talk about priests too there. So,
So it'll be everything: fish, water quality, lake levels, that sort of thing.
Yeah, you get a bit of that. You get we usually have somebody talking about invasives, which we haven't touched on either, which is one of the really big threats. Which, by the way, just showed up in Montana, and so we are very, very clean your boats, guys. If you take them out of the water and you bring them in, you clean your boat, because that could change everything we're talking about.
Yep.
Very true. Well, on that note, I'm going to wrap it up. I want to thank you three. We've got Lake Ponderay of Idaho Club with James Mullen, Dave Ivey, and from Fish and Game, Tom Whalen. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thanks for coming in.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You bet. Well, we're going to go on to a song. This is John Prine with... And that was John Prine with Fish and Whistle. It was also requested by our guests that we've just chatted with. I didn't have a chance to mention this, but full disclosure, I have been fishing with James Mullen, and it was a great day. Well, Phil.
And were there record rainbows involved?
No records, but a great day. We caught quite a few fish, and we did catch one bull trout that we released immediately.
Yep.
All right. Well, we don't have much time left this morning, so we're just going to go ahead with our KRFY reader board and then out with another song. For those of you just joining us, it is KRFY, listener-supported radio. You can always listen to the podcast later. So tomorrow's morning show is going to be host Susie Prez and guest host Joanne Royhan, and their first guest will be Lindy Lewis from Underground Kindness Project. Their second guest will be Debbie Love with the Distinguished Young Women High School Scholarship Program. And then Thursday, tune in to host Jack Peterson and Jim Healy as they sit down with folks from Angels Over Sandpoint with tales of the upcoming Follies.
Well, that's right. That's this weekend.
It is this weekend. And if you don't have tickets, it sounds like it may be hard for you to get them.
I think they usually sell out ahead of time. If they're not sold out now, sometimes you can scour some up on Facebook.
That's right. Well, because we had a great and rather lengthy interview, we won't be going much further into events this week, and it's out with a final song. This is a great one for today, Simon and Garfunkel, Bridge Over Troubled Water. And we're playing that because on this day in 1970, it began a six-week-long run as number one single in the U.S., and that's a great record. Thank you for joining us, and out with Bridge Over Troubled Water.